Good day, Colorado Avalanche fans and NHL fans across the metro area. This is King Cole and Gregory Doudna. Said it right that time? Coming at you with In the Crease Avalanche Hockey Review, where we cover all things Avalanche and NHL breaking news across the league. This is our 12th episode of the 2021 season. And we're covering the Avalanche's last four games. That was two games against the San Jose Sharks and two games against the Anaheim Ducks, the 7th and 8th place team in the Honda West Division. I will start this by saying this right here. Do not underestimate any team within the Honda West Division. It's a very tight race up and down on the stat sheet, as well as the overall standings in that division. So we'll go ahead and get things started and get the ugly stuff out of the way. Monday's games open up the month of March. Did not go according to plan for the Colorado Avalanche as they came off that back-to-back games win against Arizona in the desert. We lost 6-2 to the San Jose Sharks in what turned out to be a pretty rough game, and the second 6-2 loss for the Avs in less than a week there, Greg. And a lot of fans started wondering, you know, is this the pressure of being the favorite for the Stanley Cup, or was this just, you know, another one of those we've been hit by injuries and the team just isn't playing well?
Yeah, I really feel this was kind of the week that showed that the Colorado Avalanche are mortal. You know, it showed that they're not just the superpower, gonna steamroll everybody team that I'm sure we were kind of hoping for. But, you know, that's highly unrealistic, especially being in such a tight division and in a division with teams that, yeah, while they might not be, you know, blowing up stats, sheets and may not be doing well standings wise, they're all really good hockey teams. And so coming out against teams like San Jose, like Anaheim, struggling, it really showed that, you know, the Avs are mortal. They're not these untouchables that we kind of hold them to be sometimes. So yeah, it's rough. You know, this this division is no joke. I understand, obviously, the situation this year of having the divisions the way they are, but man, I wish we could see some other teams around this league, and I would love to see the Canadian teams. I think that would be a blast. I think they would get a real quick rude awakening that, hey, yeah, obviously McDavid's going to do McDavid things, Austin Matthews is going to do Austin Matthews things, but you guys probably aren't all that hot going up against, you know, the folks here in the West. I'd put money on saying that we would show a lot of teams that they that they're kind of in some cushy divisions right now.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about cushy divisions. I mean, you look at some of these other teams that are struggling. You know, the Buffalo Sabres. Who knows what's going on in Buffalo? You know, they've been rumored Jack Eichel, you know, a trade. Taylor Hall, you know, again on the trade block. The Devils, you know, they started out pretty strong. They had their COVID issue, and you know, it's really starting to show that the departure of Corey Crawford, who decided to retire over playing this season, you know, putting all that pressure on Mackenzie Blackwood for them and their goaltending department, is really not starting to pay dividends. And the New York Rangers, you know, with the departure of Henrik Lundqvist and relying on Georgiev there, it's really starting to show stuff in the East. In the Central, you've got teams like Detroit, who is obviously in a rebuild. Nashville, who's struggling just a little bit. And the surprise team for me being the Dallas Stars. You know, this is a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year and didn't have a whole lot of turnover on their team, and they're struggling. You know, they've got at least four games in hand against, you know, Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina, but they're still struggling. They've only got 7 wins on the season. And a team like Chicago really is excelling and stepping up. And that's without Kirby Dach and without Jonathan Toews, who are both out with significant injuries and may not see some time towards the end of the season. Then you look at, you know, the Scotia North, which is all those Canadian teams, and the bottom three teams are Calgary, Vancouver, and Ottawa. Ottawa's got Jari playing goal for them, and Vancouver's got Braden Holtby, who went over from Washington, and Calgary's got, you know, their goaltending duo. David Rittich, I think, is playing most of the time there for them. But it's, you know, it's crazy to see these, you know, these other teams being able to beat up on some of these teams in a true rebuild. But you look at the bottom four teams in the Honda West, the Sharks, solid goaltending in Martin Jones. We've talked about this in the past. The Anaheim Ducks, they have a quality duo with John Gibson and Ryan Miller, who we saw last night. Ryan Miller wasn't exactly, you know, doing a whole lot, but once we got pucks past him, you know, a little flawed. But Arizona has a quality goaltending duo, and Los Angeles Kings have Jonathan Quick and Pedersen that we've discussed in the past. Vegas, Marc-Andre Fleury, St. Louis Blues has a solid goaltender, and so does Minnesota. So, like you said, I think if we were able to play other teams in other divisions and stuff like that, it would be, I think we would see the Avs thrive a little bit more than what diehard fans are expecting. After that loss, that first loss against San Jose, I believe it was Tuesday they had a practice, and then Wednesday they had an optional practice, but they did have a team meeting. It wasn't just a players meeting, it was everybody, you know, coaches, trainers, players, everybody got together, they met, they sat down, you know, virtual meeting, whatever it was that they did, and they're like, look, we need to get on the same page. And even some of the players had mentioned, oh, we're not playing as hard against some certain teams. I'm like, you have to play hard in this Honda West division day in, day out. You can't just sleep on any of these teams, because any of these teams are capable of making a solid run and, you know, putting points on the board. The game last night for Anaheim, winning 5-4 against us in overtime, that's the kick in the butt that they need. They were 0-6-3 before that win. You know, they hadn't won a game in over 9-10 games. So for them to finally get a win, that might be the spark that Anaheim needs to start climbing the boards. But the Avs did respond on Wednesday night last week on March 3rd in the second game against San Jose. And it was Philip Grubauer's third shutout of the season. A 4-0 win, I believe it was, is what we got. And the Avs really, really stepped up. It was nice to see. It was actually great to see Philip Grubauer come back and, you know, and just punch him in the mouth. And I think that kind of showed everybody, you know, with the absence of key players, Makar, Byram still weren't playing, Calvert was still out, and we lost MacKinnon towards the end of that game. So it was really nice to see this team kind of bounce back and punch San Jose in the mouth and kind of calm the nerves of a lot of fans. What did you think about that team meeting heading into Wednesday's game?
Yeah, I thought it was huge. I thought it really made an impact. I felt it really changed a lot of things that we were able to then see in that game on Wednesday night, where, you know, you no longer saw it essentially being the MacKinnon and second line show. Mm-hmm. You know, it finally started to feel like the rest of the team started pulling their weight. You got a bunch of shots on goal from different players like JT Compher. Got a couple from Tyson Jost. You know, Tyson's always been in there flying around, throwing the puck on net, so that's pretty regular to see. But, you know, you started to really kind of see this surge from players other than, you know, those named Nathan MacKinnon and that's solid second line that in many ways has kind of carried this team through most of this season. So you can tell it had an impact. And, you know, especially even coming after Nathan was injured, I believe it was 2-0 at that point. And rather than, you know, kind of getting down about it and realizing that, you know, one of the biggest leaders had just left the ice, they got pissed and went and put two more goals on the Sharks. So, yeah, I feel like it kind of energized the rest of this team in a way that we've all been hoping to see come a lot sooner, but, you know, eventually finally got there, and I feel like that kind of carried over into the next two games against Anaheim, especially the first one, you know, having Valanciunas score two goals and seeing him finally come alive, and yeah, it was a very necessary meeting for sure. I feel like it righted a lot of wrongs that were going on throughout the season.
Yeah, definitely for sure. You know, that Wednesday game, the 4-0 win, you saw Landeskog get on the board four times, a goal and three assists. Mikko Rantanen was on the board, two goals, two assists. And I think Kadri and a couple other people got on the boards. But I think it was a wake-up call, like you were saying, a wake-up call for more than just the top line, more than just that second line with Kadri and Burakovsky. And Thursday or Friday's game, you know, against the Anaheim Ducks, who were in town, spoke volumes to that. It was a hard fought game. You know, people are like, oh, why can't the Avs put up four or five goals a game? I'm like, yeah, we're down several key players, you know, several big offensive pieces, and you're plugging it with Jacob McDonald, Dan Ranouf, who's played really well in his call up with the Colorado Avalanche. You know, you had some other people, you know, coming in and filling roles that, you know, they're not used to filling. I mean, how do you replace a Nathan MacKinnon, you know, on that top line? You don't. You just hope for the next best thing. You know, how do you replace a Cale Makar and a Bowen Byram? You don't. You hope for the next best thing. And I think that's one thing that people have to understand. You know, we're biding our time. We're just sitting back. We're filling these injuries out, and we're hoping that those people recover in a fast fashion. Friday's game, the big person to step up in that game was Valeri Nichushkin, and I have to say, I think it was a breath of fresh air for a lot of people seeing somebody get put up on that, you know, moved up a line, and he really went out and shined, and he had that Nathan MacKinnon like energy, you know, especially with that overtime goal, you know, get the puck, skates from left, you know, from left to right and back in again, you know, just kind of holding that defender at bay and sneaking that puck past Gibson. It was a beautiful thing to see, and it was really a signature win and a signature game-winning goal for Valeri Nichushkin in his career. Great to see. The game last night, Saturday night, against the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks got out to an early 2-0 lead. And then the second period, we tied it up in the second period. And then the Avalanche got out to an early, a 4-2 lead early in the third before things kind of deteriorated back towards the back end of that game. You know, it got to 4-3, and you're like, oh, no, here we go again. And I'm pretty sure Hunter Miska, who was playing in his fourth career NHL game, was also thinking, oh, crap, here we go. Now I got to really be on my toes. And I spoke to you about this yesterday after the game happened, before I eventually passed out. But Andrei Burakovsky last night was probably his worst game of his career so far with the Colorado Avalanche. Anaheim's first goal was a mistake. I don't know if you saw it, or they talked about it on the broadcast. You know, he was standing at the faceoff. His job was to come through the faceoff circle to take that defender. Instead, he decided to go around the winger in front of him, which opened up that space right there in front of the goal in Hunter Miska, and that's unfortunately where the puck came on the faceoff, and it was a quick slap shot, one-time type goal for the Anaheim Ducks. The big issue for Andre Burakovsky, and why I feel part of that game went into overtime, was his unnecessary roughing penalty, where he basically cross-checked, or I think they called it a cross-check. He cross-checked an Anaheim player. High stick, cross-check, whatever you want to call it. It was a stick across the face of... I'm surprised he didn't get a double minor for a high cross-checking, high-sticking, you know, because he could have called them both at that point. The Anaheim player right in the face, behind the play, whistle blew, refs threw him in the box, and it was mere moments later that Anaheim scored the game-tying goal, which led to overtime. You know, if you're a coach, if you're a fellow player on that roster and you see this happen, especially I think it was like 3.5 minutes left in the game, what's going through your mind when you see a player do this, knowing that there's 2 points on the line in a weird season?
Dismay and rage, honestly. These are professionals, as we've said multiple times on this broadcast. These are professional athletes. These are people who get paid to do what they do. They're in the top 750 in the entire world to be able to be where they are doing what they do. And so to see these, lapse in judgment and not having that wherewithal to know, hey, this is a big moment. There's less than 5 minutes. Let it go. Just let it go. If someone's pissing you off, who cares? They're gonna be pissed in 5 minutes because they're gonna have lost. So to see someone, especially an Andrei Burakovsky, someone who has been so stellar for this team since he has arrived, someone who has been so solid and has contributed so much. See him, of all people, just have these moments, to give up the goal in the first by making a very, very easy. Mark Rycroft was nailing on the head. I was taught that in Pee Wee hockey. I'm sure anybody who grew up playing hockey, we were taught that as wingers in your defensive zone, you stay in front of the people with the puck. You stay in front of the people who are going to shoot. You cut in front of people. You cut off those angles. So to see him just have that lapse, and then to get, again, 4 minutes left in the game that you're winning, and to start the whole thing. I mean, to go back and watch what happened to lead to that, it was a little hit behind the play that suddenly Berkey just decided, okay, I'm going to slash you. Oh, you pushed me. Well, now I'm going to hit you in the face with my stick. I mean, it just. Yeah, I can't imagine Bednar slept well last night. I can't imagine that he, felt anything positive after witnessing something like that from, again, a player that has been so solid for this team and has been such a big contributor.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody on the Avalanche roster slept very well last night, knowing that they let Anaheim back into that game, and that penalty was a pretty was a turning point in the game. You give Anaheim all this momentum towards the end of the game after scoring four unanswered goals, and you earn a point, yes, and it helps you maintain your position in the standings. But at the same time, you're throwing your goaltending under the bus, and I see a lot of the diehard fans, on several group pages, and oh, Hunter Miska's trash and blah blah blah. I'm like, I get it. He's a young goaltender. You guys understand. He's only played four games at the NHL level. A lot of this, I've pointed out two mistakes by one guy that led to two different goals against Hunter Miska. If there's not a man advantage, where you're only playing with four people on the ice and they've got five, that fourth goal may not have happened. Who knows? You could have played a little more offensively instead of sitting back and playing defensively. There's a lot more that goes into the game that a lot of fans aren't willing to see, or they just don't care to see. And I think that's the idea behind what we do with Rocky Mountain Sports Report and our podcasts and stuff, is we want to try to enlighten our fellow Avs fans to the intricacies of hockey and everything else. I mean, we love this sport. And we really want to present it to them in that way. Looking forward to this upcoming week, there's 3 games, 4 games on the dock if you want to include next Sunday. We have a 2-game series against the Arizona Coyotes who are coming back to town. And then we have a 2-game series against the Los Angeles Kings. Who are coming to town. Abs are in the midst of a 9-game home stand. So plenty of home games. I wish we could be there. Hopefully that changes soon. I think Colorado's starting to step down on their COVID precautions and stuff. not as much as some other states are, but we're getting there. Arizona Coyotes, we've taken the first two games against them. That was the back-to-back series, and both of them were tightly contested games. Believe you know, one goal games on both sides. So now we got to look at, can the Avs, even with their injuries and everything, consistently try to put up three goals? The hope is for four, but we've only seen six games now. I think it's six games now, including Saturday's game, where the Avs have put up four or more goals. I think, and I want to get your opinion on that. Is it because of the goaltending? Is it because of teams realizing how the Avs attack the zone, or is it just the chemistry and people start, you know, people aren't quite waking up? Was it that lack of a preseason and a true training camp that really affects the offensive scoring abilities of the Colorado Avalanche? Because I mean, you look at teams like Edmonton and Toronto who are tearing up their division, and some of these other teams that are putting goals in the back of the net pretty consistently. What's the driving factor behind the Avs not being able to score, you know, dozens of goals per game?
Yeah, I think it has to be kind of emphasized that it's a mix of all of it. You know, our division seeing goaltending that no other division is. I believe like five of the top seven or eight goalies are in the West, and yeah, teams have maybe not, you know, 100% figured out the Avs, but they're getting a pretty good feel for, hey, we smother these guys and they kind of panic, you know. And in the post game that I'd done for the 3-2 win on Friday against the Ducks, I brought up the fact that was the most physical I'd seen this team play all year long. And that's something that needs to continue if you're going to give your game a different element that teams are going to have to respond to. So much of the time we see in losses or in tight games where a team just smothers the Avs, you know, doesn't allow them easy access into the offensive zone, and turns into a little bit of panic, and there's not really a big, you know, ideal change to make it to where we can gain it entry into the zone, and we can do the things that our team does. And it typically ends up taking some kind of phenomenal play by Nathan or by Mikko or, you know, anybody else, but it's something that I feel the Avs definitely need to address, that hey, if a team's smothering you, hit them. You know, get through them. If they're not giving you that ice, take that ice. And unfortunately, we don't see it very often. We see, oh, they're not giving me this ice, and so I cough up the puck, and suddenly they have a 3-2 advantage going the other way. So it's very much a combination of phenomenal goaltending in the West, and I don't want to say an unwillingness, because we saw a willingness again in that Friday game. There's very much a willingness to throw the body around to say, hey, we're done being bullied, especially by these California teams that are just big and rough and don't want you in their zone. So it's there. I don't know why we're not seeing it come out more often. It's something that, you know, teams are kind of showing the, if you can't beat them, beat them. And the Avs aren't showing a, well, if you can't beat them, join them type situation, where that has now proven to work again, as we saw on Friday. So it's a big mix of all the issues, and I would hope that at this point the chemistry thing isn't as much of an issue, with it being now or 20 games into the season,
22
22.
games.
Yeah, so I feel like there's been enough time. You know, we can earlier we could definitely keep looking at, oh, there wasn't a preseason, there wasn't, you know, a lot of practice to get used to everybody. But, you know, we're over a third into this season now. We better be able to start gelling as a team. And obviously, I know it kind of throws a wrench into things. We have the injuries that you do that ends up kind of breaking up that second line. You know, Kadri Saad and Burakovsky, they had a phenomenal thing going throughout so much of the early part of the season, because they were together all the time. You know, there wasn't a lot of change going on, between that second line so that they could kind of get used to each other a little bit more. Now that's starting to change because you got to fill the gaps. You have to fill in injuries. So, yeah, that obviously plays a part. But, yeah, these are 20 professionals that should know how to play and respond to each other at this point. So, yeah, I feel like it's a lot more the first two, the goalies and, yeah, just the unwillingness to get off of a game plan, even for a little bit. I honestly hadn't noticed in any game throughout the early part of the season where there was a willingness to say, all right, this isn't working, let's change it. It was almost, this isn't working, but we're going to keep grinding it until it does. And sometimes that works. Sometimes that's how you wear teams down, and it's proven viable in the past, but sometimes it doesn't, and then you find yourself losing 6-2, kicking yourself in the butt, going, well, what was all that? So, I think those are the big factors, I would say.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. And, hopefully over a period of time, like you said, the abs are starting, the chemistry should be there and everybody's starting to gel. I understand with some injuries it might be hard for these players who are being pulled in from the taxi squad or players being called up from the Eagles to gel with a line that, they're not as familiar with a player's tendencies on, if they're going to skate into the zone here, I should be here. Do they want somebody trailing them? Do they want somebody on the other side of the ice, for an open pass? What the case is? And that's what a lot of practice is, figuring out the play style and, just the how you want to go about it. We don't see a lot of what goes on as far as calling out plays and, set plays and stuff like that for hockey. I mean, there are set plays in every single sport. Football, baseball, basketball, and hockey. That's what the coaches try to teach, is their philosophy and everything else. And I know Bednar is more about the speed and the setup within the zone, but like you, I want to see some of that physicality come across. Nikita Zadorov was an enforcer. He was out there to put the body on the people. And you're seeing some willingness from players like Cale Makar and Bowen Byram to be physical and dish out hits, but they're also taking, they're being targeted. If they're out there digging a puck out, you have to be physical in the corners and against the walls and stuff. So as a defenseman, you have to do that. When we're talking about hits, I believe you and I, Greg, are talking more about our forwards and our wingers stepping up and placing hits where they got to and everything else. I mean, Landeskog's a big body person, so you would hope he would be a little more physical and kind of lead the way as the captain of this team. People like Nichushkin, he's a big guy, he's a big body. You want to see him laying a couple hits, but using his speed to his advantage as well. McKinnon has thrown some hits here and there, but it's not really his style of a game, but I would like to see it just a little bit more to clear out some of that space, especially when he's being, he's being trailed by sometimes 2 to 3 players from the opposing team whenever he's on the ice, clear some room for him, try not to take the interference penalties, and stuff like that, but a little physicality against those players gets them back off just a little bit to give McKinnon some more room to work, and we've all seen McKinnon doesn't need much room to do what he does best. We'll dive into injuries, some updates on those. The big one was Eric Johnson was officially moved to long-term IR, which means that the hit he suffered in the game against Minnesota is more severe than initially thought, and I believe it still is that upper body injury, which is a concussion in his case. And he's probably dealing with some pretty serious issues related to that. So I think that's why they put him on the long-term IR. The other one, Pavel Francouz, is still on long-term IR. There's no timetable for his return either. Matt Calvert has skated in a non-contact jersey during practices, so hopefully he's getting closer to return. I think, the big question is how much can he contribute, and will his lingering post-concussion issues costs him to shorten his career significantly compared to what he may have planned. Cale Makar and Bowen Byram, I believe, are also skating in non-contact jerseys with upper body injuries just to get some conditioning in, but there's still no timetable on their returns either. They're currently listed as day-to-day. And then everybody's favorite player, Nathan MacKinnon, is also currently day-to-day. The hit to the head, knocked him on the chin pretty good. Still feeling some uneasiness, little unsteadiness. We did speak about this on the post on our post-game podcast on Wednesday night, that he would probably miss the next couple games. That has appeared to be the case. Looks like he may miss Monday night's game. Hopefully he'll return on Wednesday, which would be about the week timeline that he'll be gone. So hopefully we'll see MacKinnon come Wednesday night. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him again until Wednesday, if not the Friday game against LA. I think that's all the injuries, but we're gonna skip on to some questions that I've seen pop up on some of the group pages, and the big one was the goaltending issue. A lot of people are wanting the Avs to go out and get a better quality backup goaltender. I spoke a little bit to them about this, just giving my feedback and comments, but Philip Grubauer is covering most of the workload for the Colorado Avalanche right now, Greg, and Hunter Miske has only seen the ice 4 times in 22 games, which means that Grubauer's seen the other 18. If you're the Colorado Avalanche right now, 22 games into the season, we're almost at the halfway point. Halfway point is 28 games. Are you concerned as a fan or in Joe Sakic's shoes, based on the Avs' current standings, of getting a backup goaltender, or are you holding out hope that Pavel Francouz returns? Let's say he's out another month and a half or so, or another 2 months, and he comes back and plays gets a sprinkle of games in the last 10, 15 games of the season. Are you holding out hope for that Pavel Francouz comes back, or are you, like some of these fans, ready to hit the panic button and say, we need better goaltending?
Yeah, I hate to say I'm kind of in the same boat as some of these fans that are hitting the panic button, in that it's something we don't know, and I feel like you can't bank on the unknown when you have something like Francouz's injury, which still obviously none of us even know what it is, but that he got placed on long-term IR a while back. It's something that you and I have talked about, that if this is the window, if this is your opportunity to win a cup, you can't sit back. You have to go all in. We've seen teams do it over and over and over again, that if this is really the chance, you have to take that chance in whatever way you can. And if it comes down to, all right, we just got a backup goaltender and hey, Frankie's better, honestly, fantastic. Obviously, it's going to cost the Avs to get a goaltender. It's not something that they're just going to, snag a free agent or, anything like that. Like, they're going to have to make a trade. They're going to have to talk some money with someone, I'm sure. But honestly, I'd kind of rather that. I'd rather have the momentary upsetness of losing someone to another team for a more seasoned, more steady backup to Grubauer than to just sit back and hope that Miska kind of gets it together, or that, something happens that Frankie can come back sooner. And it's just, you typically don't latch championship teams onto hopes. You latch them onto the reality of the situation. And unfortunately, reality has shown us that our goaltending's iffy if Grubauer's not in there. So I feel it needs to, it's something that needs to be addressed. And I will say that, thankfully, from an analytics side, I'm not completely panicked yet, but it's getting to that point. As you said, halfway point's almost here, and it's where, big runs can finally start to happen. It's where big drops can finally start to happen. So You know, I'd rather see the Avs be proactive in making positive things a higher potential than sitting back and seeing how it goes.
Yeah, I hear you. Me personally, I'm more looking at it as, you know, if it was Grubauer, you know, having a rougher start to the season, you know, and the Avs not sitting where they are right now, I'd be a little more panicked, you know. But Grubauer's played 18 games. He's got, I think, 11, 12 wins in those 18 games, with 3 shutouts. You know, he's got, you know, he's sitting in second place, tied for second place in shutouts. He's, I think, sitting 7th place in goals against average in the league, and I think he's sitting just outside the top 10 in save percentage right now, at like a 93% or something like that. But I'm not too panicked about Philip Grubauer with Hunter Miska. I take his games with a grain of salt. You know, he's had 4 games. He's 1-3 in those games, but I don't think the win loss record is as dramatic an issue for Hunter Miska as it's been the play in front of him in some of those games. You know, we talked about Saturday night's game, you know, the mistakes that were made, especially with Burakovsky, that led to 2 goals, and Miska just happened to be the goaltender in net, you know. And most of us, we see the goals and we're like, oh, how'd you let that win in? Or, you know, we fail to see the small intricate details unless we're truly paying attention to them in those situations. Now, if our goaltending situation was, you know, 22 games in and Miska's played 11 of them, and, you know, because Grubauer's been so bad and they just want to try and switch it up and give Grubauer additional rest, I'd be way more panicked than what I am. Seeing that as there's usually at least a day off between most games, and Grubauer gets a chance to, you know, rest in between games and get his conditioning back up and kind of refocus on what's coming up. And the fact that we're only playing 7 other teams, you know, so you have the video, you can go back and you can watch, and, you know, this is what they did. What could they possibly change or tweak or whatever? It'd be one thing if we're playing, you know, the other 30 teams in the league, and we have to, you know, in the game, you don't have much game film on some of them. But we're only playing 7 teams. There's tons of game film against us and against opposing teams in our division. So it's easier to collect that data when you're only facing 7 other teams. The hope is that Pavel Francouz returns at some point this season, but, you know, as you pointed out, you can't necessarily bank on that. So you have to be wary, and you kind of have to focus on, all right, you know, at what point do we, you know, do we cut ties with somebody and look at that trade to find a goaltender of some caliber? You know, who would you go and you collect from? You know, Detroit's a good candidate for a goaltender with, you know, the players that they have there. You know, you look at some of the other teams that may not make the playoffs that have a goaltender that they might be willing to part with, something like that. You know, I was surprised to see the Avs let go of Hutchinson in the offseason, and he went back to Toronto. He was a rental player for a period of time when we had our injury before, but now that Toronto is actually doing well in their division, the Scotia North, they're not going to let Hutchinson go again. You know, they need somebody to back up Frederik Andersen on nights when he gets off. So that's going to be the question that Joe Sakic has to address. If Pavel Francouz isn't going to be ready, you know, and get some amount of playing time in the regular season, I doubt you're going to bring him in for the playoffs to spill Grubauer for any purposes. So before that April deadline, I think the trade deadline is April 12th. The Avs may have to address trying to trade for a goaltender, and it's not going to be a pretty picture for Avs fans. You know, you want a goaltender, you want somebody to back up Philip Grubauer. be prepared to potentially lose a big name player to clear some of that cap space, because the Avs are up against that cap space, and it's gonna be it's not gonna be pretty. I could potentially see us losing some players that people have called for, like a Belmar or a Kadri, or even Brandon Saad, who's only here on a year deal. If there's a candidate to be traded, it's Brandon Saad, which, unfortunate as it is, that's a $5 million cap hit for us this year. And you can clear $5 million in a cap that gives you room to go grab any goaltender in a trade. And if Saad's doing well, there are some teams that would be willing to take on that contract. So, food for thought for fans out there. If you wanna see a goaltender come in to help out Grubauer, because I know a lot of fans aren't happy with Hunter Miskus' performance, and Adam Werner got sent back down to the Eagles and apparently wasn't doing so hot the other night. So we'll see where they go. Upcoming games against the Arizona Coyotes. How you feeling about this games 3 and 4 against the Coyotes coming up early this week there, Greg?
I'm hopeful. We'll see who we get back. I think that'll play a big part if, you know, hopefully Kale, hopefully Bo, hopefully Nathan, you know, if they're able to come back. I feel like that'll be a big boost in, obviously, not just on ice talent, but, you know, locker room feels. It'll be a big it's a big boost.
Morale boost, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. It'll be a big boost to kind of see some, you know, some players that aren't just, you know, names. These guys have been playing well. You know, when they've gotten their chances, they do the right things and help this team. So if we can start getting some people back, I feel like that will be huge. If not, you know, I hope that the Avs do kind of what I was saying earlier and start to understand that they need to adjust if what they're trying isn't working. You know, it's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, you've seen it be kind of broke from time to time, and you know, again, these are stingy teams in the West. These aren't teams that you just run over and, you know, call it good because you're just a better team. You know, anyone can compete. Anyone can win on any given night. So you have to be willing to change up your game plan, to throw some curveballs at a team that's not expecting it. And I feel like the Coyotes, thankfully, will be a good place to kind of start that. You know, after them and after the Kings and the makeup game against the Ducks, we start seeing, you know, our big teams again. We see the Wild for two games. We see the Golden Knights for two games. So this is where we really need to buckle down and start to understand what we have to do for the rest of the season, you know, to get into a place where we are competing with Vegas regularly, and we are competing with Minnesota regularly in St. Louis. Because if we still can't get it together against teams like Arizona and LA and Anaheim, we're in trouble. You know, we're not looking too hot if that ends up being the case. And again, injuries will always play a part, but we can't keep harping on injuries being, you know, the reason. And again, these are the best players in the world. You know, you can't fill the shoes of a Nathan MacKinnon, but again, you can get the next best thing, hopefully, if that's, you know, what a player is capable of doing. So I'm looking forward to these games against Arizona. I feel like they're one of those perfect teams to kind of get a reading on where you're at in the season and where you can potentially go. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the Avs are willing to put up with and what they're willing to change, and, you know, just what they're willing to do to win games that they need to win.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up some amazing points. These games against Arizona, LA, Anaheim, San Jose are great tests for the Avalanche to kind of to fine tune things and to, you know, point out. It's like, hey, we can't always rely on the Nathan MacKinnon and the Mikko Rantanen and the Nazem Kadri. We need some of these other players to, you know, to step up. So you're talking about Sam Girard, who's done well this past week in stepping up as a defenseman and putting some points on the board. You know, Nichushkin, Compher, everybody else. You know, this is where we need those depth players to really start shining and to take some of that pressure off of the bigger names on the team. And games against Arizona and LA is a time to try and get that chemistry and get and, you know, kind of change things up and test things and, you know, try to get that puck in the back of the net. And it's looking like the Avs have that fine marker. If they can get 3 goals consistently in a game, they're going to have a chance to win games, you know, and at least steal a point here and there. But if the Avs really want to take control and really want to start ensuring that they're going to win games, they've got to get more than 3 goals a game. You know, four goals, I think typically in the Honda West division is a solid marker that you're going to win games. You know, the probability of winning a game after 4 goals, I think, is around 75% to 80% of the time for that team. And like you said, teams like the Vegas Golden Knights, the St. Louis Blues, and Minnesota Wild, which are the three other teams favored to make it to the playoffs from this division, you know, you can't make mistakes in those games. You honestly can't. Based on their the prowess of their goaltenders and you know, players like Marchessault and Stone for the Knights and Kirill Kaprizov up in Minnesota, who's starting to come into his role up there in Minnesota. You know, that's a future leader on that team and offensive power on that team. You really got to start taking those things into account, and you know, you can't mess around when those teams come to play. So for the Avs, it's going to be interesting to see how much they improve. How much, you know, they get away from the, oh, well, the injury bug got us again. I'm like, this has been going on for 3, 4 years. I mean, as a fan, you're sitting there and you're like looking around, you're asking the Avalanche organization as a whole, like, is it your training regimen? Is it your athletic trainers? Is it your philosophy? What is it that is causing all these injuries? I mean, that's part of it. Part of it is, you know, the human body itself, you know, it's a lot to strap on, you know, pads and everything and, you know, go out on the ice for 20 minutes a game as an individual and skate your heart out and take the hits and, you know, keep on chugging along and then your recovery period. It's professional athletes do not have an easy life, you know, regardless of the amount of money they make, their body takes a toll. That's why they want to get the money that they're getting paid. All that being said, I too am looking forward to the this week's, you know, the games this week. The Avs have an off day in between every single one of their games for the next, I think, 4 or 5 games or so. So it'll definitely be nice to see. They're through, I think, half of their back-to-back games for the season, so. Only a few more of those to go, and hopefully we see some improvement from the abs overall, as you were bringing up, Greg. But that's about it that I've got for the podcast this week. Any other parting words or any other things that we haven't touched on that you'd like to address personally, Greg?
Not too much. My biggie is I'm stoked to see the choo-choo train kind of kicking it into gear. Last year, he really became one of my personal favorites, just with his story. I'm a sucker for perseverance, so having someone that has the story that he has coming up and getting an opportunity, because Joe Sakic, for whatever reason, has that just innate ability to find the gems in the rough, or the diamonds in the rough, and is able to kind of harness that it made me feel so good last season seeing him have the year that he did. And so I've been keeping a close eye on him this year, and I am thrilled to see him kind of start coming into his own again and start doing what we know he can do. So that one feels good for me personally. That makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
That's definitely a great story with Nichushkin. For those of you who don't know, Valeri Nichushkin was a high draft pick for the Dallas Stars and never really broke in with the Dallas Stars or figured out his role and his ability on the ice. I don't know if it was an organizational thing with the Dallas Stars or if Nichushkin just truly couldn't put it together. And as you pointed out, Joe Sakic has been amazing at finding these players on other teams that just haven't panned out and turning it into something more amazing. I mean, another story would be Andrei Burakovsky that he picked up from the Washington Capitals and who had an amazing season last season. So,
Jonas Donskoy is another one. Yep. He's got that ability to just be like, yeah, that guy's good where he is, but he can come to the Avs and be great.
Yeah, same. Pierre-Edouard Belmar, is another one. It's great to see some of these players come from other teams and really, really kind of put it together and show up. And for me, you're talking about a player that really starting to come into their own and everything is. For a player for me, and I'll be completely honest, I wasn't really high on him, was Samuel Girard. Defenseman, very, very capable defenseman and everything else like that. Was one of those pieces in the Matt Duchene trade that, you kind of scratched your head about. You're like, okay, what's this guy going to do? And, I personally thought it was more about the draft pick capital that the Avalanche had gotten in that trade that Sakic made. And now this season, I think this season specifically, we're starting to see the best of Samuel Girard come out of the woodwork. He's having to step up. He's having to play more time with the absences of Makar, Johnson, and Byram. I mean, this cat's been playing 25, 26 minutes a game. That's a lot of time on ice for any player. And he's, since the Lake Tahoe series, the game, he's been consistently putting up points. You saw Saturday night, he finally got over the 100 career point mark. He got 2 assists in Saturday night's game, which puts him at 101 points in his career, which huge congratulations to Samuel Girard, by the way, on that milestone. But there was a specific play, and I think it was Saturday night's game that led to one of the goals, where he just held onto the puck for a good 20-30 seconds in the offensive zone and just skated around and kind of just did what Nathan MacKinnon would typically do, skate around in the zone holding the puck and stick handling and everything else, and eventually handed it off to somebody else, and it led to a goal. So I'm really impressed by his style of play and what he's been able to contribute with the injuries that are in place. So a good pick on your part, Valeri Nichushkin. I think Girard's another player to highlight that's done really well in the past couple weeks and is really, really been impressive in my book, personally.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one. He's been killer.
But that's pretty much going to do it for us this week, folks. We're coming up on our hour window. One last thing. I will apologize for the technical difficulty issues on our ability to... We were trying to live stream on Saturday night during the game. Had some issues. Had to cancel that extremely last minute as we worked super hard and trying to get our live stream up and running for you guys. We will troubleshoot that this week, and we'll keep everybody posted when we are able to do it. But we're not going to post anything until we're absolutely sure everything works and everything's up and running, and instead of just hoping for the best, which I think is what we did this last time. So we're not going to rush it. We'll get out there. We'll get our live stream up to you guys. Until that time, Continue to tune into our podcast. We will continue doing our post-game podcasts as well. We got one coming up tomorrow night after the game, and then Wednesday we'll have another. But yeah, stay tuned. We'll get those going, and we'll catch everybody else on another night. For Gregory Downda and Doudna, got it. I caught it that time. And myself, King Cole, thank you guys for tuning in tonight. And wherever you are, please stay safe, stay healthy, and as always, keep rooting for these Avs. They're fighting, they're getting there, and we'll see you guys on our next episode.